It's a Power of Love Wednesday.
Yeah, that's Pete Seeger, right?
No, it's Huey Lewis Day on the Roundtable.
Right, yes.
Huey Lewis is going to be on at 10 o'clock. We are more than a little excited. So all of our bumper music will be Huey Lewis today. Good morning. Welcome to our panel. We have a wonderful panel assembled. Alan Chartok is to my immediate right on the radio. Good morning, Alan.
Unusual to be to the right.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
Only in geographic terms. Right down the middle is Ray Graff.
That's right. It's a strike.
And joining us on the left,
appropriately
enough, is Rosemary Armeo, who I am pleased to announce is joining us now as a full-time panelist on the program.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I'm going to practice my radio voice.
Oh, that's good.
And learn terms like bumper music.
Sure.
That's right. Well, I have to say we're thrilled to have you here every
good.
Day. It's just better to know that you're here.
To start an hour a day talking, that's great. My family doesn't even allow that.
We have a lot of great topics to talk about today. And when I say great topics, I mean newsworthy topics. And there's a lot of disturbing news, a lot of sex in the news, a lot of different things to talk about. And we will go over these one by one. I assume the big story that I think is a water cooler story, but also is one of those stories that is just incomprehensible, you don't quite get, and that is the story that came out of Cleveland, where we found out that this group of men.
Yeah, they're brothers, three brothers.
Three
One
brothers.
Owns the house, and two others are arrested as
and
well.
Had kept hostages for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a young woman who was 17 years old and was abducted and is now 27, now has a child, and was freed on Monday. And it's one of those stories that is just sort of incomprehensible because they were living in the community,
and this
sort of went without any without any real. I mean, now we're hearing stories of we saw them here and we saw them there, but we didn't put two and two together, and I think back to the Elizabeth Smart case as well of how something like this could happen.
Yeah, that the neighbors are agog because this was a man. The owner of the house is someone they knew and had associated with. The girls themselves were abducted from the neighborhood, their local kids, when they were taken. And they were not just hostages. They were sex slaves. I mean, that's coming out, and we need to use the term, as was Elizabeth Smart, as was Janelle Dugard. It's deeply disturbing. And I also think it goes to a conversation we've had here repeatedly about the use of surveillance. The own neighbors who spent 10 years with these people did not know that was anything was going on. What will cameras do?
The other thing, too, is that you figure this woman got her one shot
right.
to get out of there. And 10 years later, you know, and you think of, oh, my God, of just trying to look for that moment where you can escape.
Well, we don't really know that yet, Joe. And I think that's an important part of the story, too, that Elizabeth Smart, the hostage, the young Mormon girl who was stolen
right.
out of her bedroom and spent 9 months with these weirdo polygamous cult. We don't know that. Was there a telephone in the house that they could not use?
Right.
She was in the hospital, we presume, but maybe not to have the baby. But there's a hostage state of mind where you
Stockholm.
Don't. Stockholm syndrome, right, where you do not think you can get away. You even And you also lose your value. These were young girls who were, we would think, if Elizabeth Smart is right, who were raped, who were sexually assaulted, who did not think that their family would want them back. They feel like this is something they almost deserve. It's a very disturbing thing that happens to young women when they're in this, you know, unspeakable situation.
When you think about the police were in the man's home in 2000. Like they came to his house he had called the police for a disturbance. They had come to his house, and it's just remarkable if you think of so many of the well this could have been or that could have been, and it's really incredible.
And in the Dugard case, it was the same situation. The man had kept this young hostage and two children that he had fathered with her in a squalid camp in his backyard, and police had been called there, and the same thing happened. But, you know, did the police now routinely need at every stop to say, oh, do you have any young girls tied up in back bedrooms? I'm not sure what the police can do.
You know, back in the day, just shows you how old I'm getting. There was this woman, Kitty Genovese.
Oh, yes.
Oh, sure.
And a lot of neighbors heard the screams and did nothing.
As she was being stabbed in the middle of New York City.
Yeah, it was something. And I know that neighbors, according to all of the reports this morning, saw stuff. One neighbor reported seeing, if you're to believe any of this stuff, girls being walked around on leashes, naked in the back on the backyard.
Oh, I've not heard that.
Oof. Yeah, it was there. It was in the papers this morning.
Yes.
Who knows what's true and what's not? But how far are you supposed to go? We, as a society, have decided to make this guy who's the next door neighbor into a worldwide hero.
Charles Ramsey. I'm one of those ones who thinks he's a hero.
I can't help but not think, just because he's refreshing.
He's very outspoken, but also he's a black man who hears and sees a young white woman banging on the door, yelling, "Help me, help me." He went on that front porch, and I keep thinking, would I have done that under those circumstances? He got involved. He says he thought it was a domestic violence situation, but he walked up on the front porch.
And he also said to the police people on the 911, right, you know, when you see a white chick running into the arms of a black man,
you know something's wrong.
You know something's wrong.
So, I mean, have you ever been in a situation where you saw a man yelling at a woman or a woman yelling at her young child, and you don't get involved because you go, okay, that's none of my business? Mm-hmm. That man did that. That was a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you think of him. There's the weird thing that we do, because now we've sort of made this man into a hero.
Sure.
Which is weird in and of itself, because there are heroic aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
But we hope we would all act in that way
at
some point in our lives, if we were ever put in that position. But then, of course, you have to think of the young woman who was abducted and lost this pivotal period of her life, and how she then moves on as a young mother.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're getting a whole group of these women now who are in this situation. They could form their own support group. It's highly disturbing.
Very disturbing.
Well, I suspect, and some people will call me cynical, that you're going to see some very well-read books coming out of all of this. I am sure that the agents are now banging at the doors of these women and saying, "We'll give you millions of dollars if you'll just chronicle the story."
Yeah, well, Dugard already has a book out. You know, she has written about her experience.
Elizabeth Smart is coming out with
Elizabeth Smart has made a career out of teaching young kids about sex crimes.
But isn't that good?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the more we talk about it, the better.
Yeah. I mean, I understand, you know, that people look and say, "Oh, well, you're cashing in." But also—
Oh, well, I have no problem with their cashing in.
I
don't think you can cash in enough, to be honest.
But if you're going out and talking about something that is—
It takes courage to do that, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, this is very different than an Amanda Knox situation.
Right.
But you think of that loss of
10 years.
10 years of your life, 17 to 27. I mean, that's your, you know, that's when things are supposed to happen and you change and you become an adult, and it's to have that just ripped away from you, and then to become a mom in the process, it's horrendous.
Horrendous. But the good news is, she's not dead. She can now get better, as far as she can get better. This is the great thing about the story.
Although there is some indication that there may have been another girl in the house before these three were there. And that she disappeared, in which case, Ray, your point is extremely well taken. Then it becomes a murder case. As far as I'm concerned, all of us have to do is put ourselves— I have a daughter— put ourselves in this place and say, what would you want? I'm not going to start this stuff again, but what would you want done with these guys?
I worry about all those parents who have missing or lost children who now are going to say, oh, look, Amanda Berry showed up 10 years later, and they will never, ever be able to put it to rest. That's a kind of torture.
Also, once you realize that, I mean, she is out and she is free now and going into whatever this new life will be. You have to wonder about, because I think your point is a really good one, of what does this mean for other people who have their children abducted, who may have, the children are long dead, right, unfortunately, and there's always that glimmer of hope. Mm-hmm. But also that you have a situation where, when do we give up? You know, when do we give up in looking, when it becomes a cold case? And I think that's it's an interesting thing to look at, because when do we sort of say, okay, we're done with the milk cartons now, we're going to move on to other.
Yeah, it's it's actually wider even than just sex crimes. It's the human condition. I have a friend who is very seriously ill in the hospital. I had written him off. I said he's either going to die or end up a vegetable. And, you know, 2 months later, he's coming back into himself.
Fantastic.
And I had given up news. I had given up hope. You know, I wasn't even looking for news about him anymore. Mm. So I was wrong.
And it shows on your face, by the way.
And I don't think a parent ever gives up all hope. I mean, if there is still a glimmer of hope to be had, you are going to have that hope.
I don't think the parents give up hope, but as far as the police agencies and the other and the groups that are going to go out and help you.
I'm not sure what the correct term is. These guys are either psychopaths or sociopaths. But the fact is,
despicable human beings.
Yeah, you know, what is it about our society? And also, I want to mention just the news media for a moment. Because you get a situation like the Boston bombings, and it's on CNN 24/7, you know. And here, you're going to see the same thing. Nature abhors a vacuum, a news vacuum. And this is a huge
Well, we're talking story. About it. We're taking up 20 minutes of
you
the
bet.
Show, you know. So.
You bet. I'm not being critical.
We're not casting the first stone here.
Neither am I, Arim. I'm just trying to point out that this is the way that this society is going to work. This is a horrific act. There are terrible acts all over the world. You know.
Well, it isn't just terrible stuff. There are certain news stories that are just fascinating. I'm sure they're different for different people. But can you pass? I cannot pass up a story on conjoined twins. I cannot pass up a story like this, where young women have been put through hell and now have to show even more courage to get their life back. It's. I'm glad the media covers it.
On the other hand, the Bangladesh story has over 700 people now dead, and it doesn't occupy the same place that we have for any of these stories, which I agree with you. But
there's something about this that is so to our nature of that we can imagine this happening in our neighborhoods.
Sure.
I mean, this neighborhood looks like our neighborhood. These people look like our neighbors, and that it happens right next door. This kid was going down, 17 years old, working at the McDonald's to make some extra money while she's going to school, and gets abducted. And it's one of those things where I think we can all relate to, and it ultimately, and to Ray's point, you know, it has the happy ending in the sense of that she, yes, after 10 years, but she is freed. And yet we societally look at it and say, oh, my God, where else is this going on? And I think that's what is so.
And in Bangladesh and in places in Asia where there are factories like the one that collapsed in Bangladesh, that story is as huge as this one is to us, where they have the same feelings Joe's talking about.
We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk about some other one particular story about sexual assaults in the military that has been getting quite a bit of ink as well. We will talk about that and other stories after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. The Eighth Step, closing their 45th season at Proctor's in Schenectady, with Tom Rush Saturday, May 11th, Pete and Peggy Seeger Sunday, May 12th, and Scotland's Dougie McLean Tuesday, May 14th. 8thstep.org, and Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel, Rosemary Armeo, Ray Graff, and Alan Chartok, around the roundtable. And we're talking about many issues, including, of course, the story out of Cleveland. But I do want to segue into the story that comes to us from Washington, where sexual assaults in the military are raising alarm. The problem of sexual assault in the military leapt to the forefront in Washington as the Pentagon released a survey estimating 26,000 people in the armed forces were sexually assaulted last year. That's up from 19,000 in 2010. The president is angry. Congress is demanding action. The study is based on a confidential survey that went out to 108,000 active duty service members and released just 2 days after the officer in charge of sexual assault prevention programs for the Air Force was arrested and charged with sexual battery. There you go.
That's unbelievable.
It really is. The president's words, which I think are great. The bottom line is I have no tolerance for this. If we find out somebody's engaging in this stuff, they've got to be held accountable, prosecuted, stripped of their positions, court-martialed, fired, dishonorably discharged, period. The report recorded 3,374 sexual assault reports last year, and suggesting that many victims continue not to report the crimes for fear of retribution. And it is also both, obviously predominantly men, but it is both men and women reporting cases.
The increase has been among women, though.
Yes, absolutely. So it is one of those things that I guess you can ask two questions. One is, why has this gone up so dramatically in 2 years? And also, what can the military do about it? Because is this a cultural situation?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. There's an undercurrent if you read some of the comments to the articles about this that, you know, well, women want to be in the military. This is what they get. There's increased opportunity. This is going to happen. I reject that categorically, because why is it that women have to be warned how to not be raped and young men are not warned not to rape? And I think there's a lot of that. And secondly, you're going to have a problem as long as the people you're supposed to report the assaults to are assaulters.
Right.
And nothing happens. Nothing happens. That's been a long-term problem in the military, that sexual assault is not handled as a serious matter.
It's interesting in terms of how you profile an inductee, somebody that, you know, you want in the Army or in the Marines, who's, you know, we know what we look for. We know what we don't want, obviously. So is this part of that profile, and should it be? And is this more of a system issue than it is an individual issue?
I give kudos to President Obama for his very strong and well-articulated stance against it. I mean, that he goes, as a commander-in-chief, I have your back. So I think that's a really great step forward. And he is treating it, don't you think, as a systematic problem?
Well, I think he's saying, we'll get you. Mm-hmm. I think he did the right thing. Mm-hmm. But he is saying, we'll get you if you do this, and we'll have your back. But I also think that there's a way to approach this systematically from the very beginning, in terms of you give somebody maybe a profile and a test, and you say, you think there's anything wrong with this or that, you can catch some people up who shouldn't be in the armed forces.
Oh, that's good. That's interesting. I don't know. I think that there's also a lot of situational problems here, too. These are men and women working together in close quarters. They're part of a team. They are doing physical stuff. I mean, and they're young. They're fit. Sex hormones, all that stuff has to be at play here, too.
Sure. What do you think that says to the concept of men and women working together in the armed forces?
I think it can be done, just as it is done in colleges now. You don't have, you're not seeing sexual attacks on college campuses ramp up in the last 2 years. So what's different? I think it's the view of the authorities.
Yeah,
I think that's...
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We have many other issues to discuss. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening on WAMC. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel this morning. Rosemary Armeo joins us. Ray Graff is here, as is Dr. Alan Chartok, and we welcome your input, roundtable at wamc.org. We're going to change the mood here just a little bit and talk about a political story that came out last night. We've been watching this race, I think, for a number of reasons, but this was the race in South Carolina, where lo and behold, Mark Sanford won the election yesterday, returned the ex-governor to Congress, and as far as political rehabilitations go, it doesn't get much better than this for Mark Sanford, who was running against Elizabeth Colbert Bush, who is also the sister of Stephen Colbert, best known for the Colbert Report on Comedy Central that follows The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And he certainly had a major role in the campaign as well. She had a lot of money. She certainly had great poll numbers up until this last week. And then everything started to fall apart. And lo and behold, this man who of course had an awful lot of issues where he was thrown out of office basically for saying that he was taking a hike and ultimately was with another woman in
Argentina,
yes.
Who is still, I think, his...
They're together.
Yeah, I think that should be...
This is a story about redemption. I mean, who among us has not said we're going to the Appalachian Trail and then go to Argentina?
I'm sticking out my tongue at this. I'm outraged. This is about... Okay, everyone cheats. A lot of people cheat. Sorry, not everyone. But yeah. A lot of people cheat. I have no problem with that. This man has proved himself, one, a liar. He covered up. Two, a hypocrite. He led the effort to impeach Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton never abandoned his office.
No, he had a good time in his office.
He had a good time in his office.
Yeah, why abandon it? It's working for him, you know? I mean, really. Obviously.
Use all the rooms of that office. Why not?
We love having Ray here.
Okay, Mr. Sanford just abandoned his office, just left the state to his underlings, and went off. He then had this nutty press conference with talking about his soulmate, embarrassed his wife. I mean, it's just pathetic. I'm laughing at Andy Borowitz. He's a comedian who writes for New York. I love
friend
him.
Friend of WAMC.
Yeah, and he said that Sanford owes his win to the liars of the lying community of South Carolina who turned out in force for him. And I really blame the Republican Party, who could not come up with a candidate who also battles Pelosi politics, as they're calling it, but had a better record than that.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, it's heavily
horrifying
Republican
to me. Horrifying
district.
To me.
Yeah, yeah. The Republicans got 18% over Obama in this election.
They could have thrown almost anyone out there and probably done just as well.
Or better.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is that he was governor. He got thrown out as governor, and then he runs for one congressional district in the state. And some people said, well, yeah, okay, but, you know, he wasn't – this isn't a total redemption because, you know, the rest of the state may have spurned him. But still, my goodness, you know, to go through that and to come back. The other question is how much of it is on him and redemption and how much of it was on Elizabeth Colbert Bush and the campaign that she ran, especially in the waning days.
She had $1 million.
I'm sorry, Greg.
Well, I mean, she had $1 million. I mean, the Democratic Party was – they pumped $1 million into her campaign.
A lot of money.
So,
but she ran as a liberal in a very conservative district. She did, and she made no apologies about it. If you read the accounts of the race, so you know, the fact that up until the last week, as Joe says, I kept reading too close to call.
Yeah.
But you know, I take a little bit of a different. Cautiously, I take a little bit of a different approach.
Because I'm ready to pounce.
Then yeah, Rosemary.
Exactly. I can't wait. Oh, this is about that time of the show.
Right.
I'll just back away.
Then Rosemary. Half the country, over 51% of marriages end up in divorces. And quite frequently, they end up because, as you said, I think you used the word, or Joe did before, hormonal issues. I mean, there are men and there are women.
I think I'll give that to Rosemary.
Yeah.
There are men and there are women. And this kind of thing, you know, happens. It happens to newspaper publishers who marry three times, or it have, which we never read about, by the way, in some of these newspapers. It happens. And now, I suspect the American people may be a little sick and tired of some of the shenanigans that we do when we make these people into pariahs. Now, I agree with you. I don't like them.
But why are we sick to death of the fact that they're going out and having a fling on the taxpayer's dime instead of being
right?
But what do you mean on the taxpayer's dime? The guy disappeared. Look, it was stupid. I'm not making any. I'm not making any excuses.
We don't want to miss a word.
No, no. There's the microphone.
Yes,
sorry.
As I dig deeper. I'm not making any excuses for the guy. I'm just simply saying you get Anthony Weiner.
Who should take hope in this, this election.
Well, there isn't a day that the newspapers don't say something that includes the word Weiner in it, you know, in some kind of...
Yeah.
You understand?
Sure.
Do you really write?
I'm just playing along.
Look, I never liked the guy. I'll be honest with you. I did not. I
always Sanford or Weiner?
Weiner. And he always says he's a show off and the rest of it. But I think when the POST and the NEWS just can't get enough every day, you know, of saying this guy is a terrible, terrible man.
If a guy tweets out his genitalia,
right?
What's your point?
How private are you going to be?
Well,
I mean, this is not about sex. This is about judgment. And Weiner's judgment is very much in question, and so is Sanford.
Sure, yeah.
Again, why could the party not find a better untainted
absolutely
candidate?
To me, that's the big point of when you're looking, and whether it's, and I assume it has all to do with name recognition, right? I mean, if you're looking and you want to run somebody, okay, people know this guy.
Don't do it if your name is Weiner, apparently. That's the problem.
Okay.
But I want to just, if I may, I want to just finish, if
yes,
I may,
of course.
My point,
yes,
which is I think the American people are sick to death of this. I think they understand what happens. Look, Weiner in the polls is doing, he's second.
Yeah. Well, this is the
why
same.
Why are you smiling?
Because this is the
because
same
I
situation.
Use the word Weiner and poll no. in the same sense.
Because this is the same situation as Sanford. Look, the Republicans
really
clearly.
Need a feminine influence on this show, by the way.
And that's why you're here.
Let's make a point here. As Rosemary pointed out, the Republicans couldn't find anybody better than Sanford in that district. If the Democrats can't find anybody better than Weiner in New York, what does that say about them?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true, but I'm also saying...
Well, I don't think it's a party issue. I just think it's a sleaze issue.
Isn't it finding somebody who...
I mean,
look, there were protest votes in the vote yesterday. There were conservatives who said, look, I couldn't vote for the guy, so I just gave my vote to Colbert, okay? Somebody else who's running, who's ostensibly clean, they win more handily. So this is the same situation. If Anthony Weiner wins in New York, then it's the best they can do, really?
Okay, if I can bring up one other
course.
Point on this. I think the media has not done a good job on another whole issue in the Sanford race, and that is his whole thing with God. I'm sorry. We have separation of church and state.
I am an imperfect man saved by God's grace, he said last night, the first statement that he made.
And Sanford is also a member of a very strong lobbying group in Washington. He was the K Street lobby, which are a bunch of fundamentalists who believe that they are empowered.
These are the most powerful people in Washington.
Yes, and they believe they are empowered by God and that God picks imperfect people. It doesn't matter.
But Ray
and that's deeply disturbing.
But Ray has a great objection to it.
Well, I have an objection because a person's personal...
It's not personal.
Mitt Romney was a Mormon. John F. Kennedy was a Catholic. As long as it doesn't affect your ability to do what
you
do.
Well, I think that's her point.
I think that is my point.
He is bringing it into his politics. He is they're part of the legislation as both as a governor and both as a congressman in the past. Many of the decisions were based on his religious beliefs.
And you have to do that. That is your person. This is who I am. I am going to reflect what I believe to be the core values. This is why I was elected.
Is your core values going out and having having a and having sexual relations with another woman.
No, that was a mistake.
But that is, he's an imperfect person. That's a separate issue. But as far as a person being religious and going to Washington,
books,
have at it, man.
Books have been written about this. It's above and beyond the discussion we're having. He is part of a group that believes certain people are empowered to rule the United States. And like David in the Bible, they can have problems. He went after Bathsheba. And if he goes after, if Sanford goes after a woman outside of a marriage, that's fine. It has nothing to do with politics. And yet, God is part of what he does. You can't have it both ways.
Rosemary, he has a district. The district has a... I don't like it. Don't get me wrong. The district has a morality, a sense of morality. He says these people in this district who may vote for me are like me. Therefore, I'm going to appeal to them on those grounds which we share. Look, we have a Judeo-Christian ethic in this country. We know it, and we play to that a great deal. And people talk about their religion a lot. I don't know that, you know, separation of church and state means you can't talk about your sense of what's right or wrong. I happen not to like it, but that's a different story.
But I mean, we've had Orthodox Jews, you know, who've done marvelous jobs. We've had atheists, humanists. It shouldn't really matter, right? The Constitution's the thing.
Well, I agree. It shouldn't matter. But when you have that separation, that is important.
But that's not a separation of personal belief. That's a separation of running the government and separating it from religion.
No,
this is not my,
right.
You know.
If Sanford comes along and he says, I'm sponsoring a bill to make anybody who is not a Christian, whatever, you know,
that's bad.
That's bad.
Yes.
That's when that ain't right. That isn't right either.
Yeah.
Rosemary?
I think I'm not bringing my point across well.
Oh, obviously.
Come on.
Yes, because I'm losing. So, but this goes beyond expressing your personal morality.
You.
It goes beyond letting your morality affect the kind of legislation you have. I believe that Sanford is part of a very dangerous group of powerful politicians who put money and effort into promoting the careers of certain people.
If
Sanford
that is
one. The books have been written.
If that
about
is true,
this.
Then that's a separate issue.
It is,
what
yeah.
you had originally stated, and so we're not so far apart on this.
Okay.
That's right. None of us.
Well, that was so easily taken care of.
Yes. We found a point of concession.
Well, great.
Right.
It must be time for break. Everyone looked at the clock and said, let's kiss and make up. It's time for a break. We don't want the underwriting to go to hell. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back and talk about other stories. One of my favorites having to do with a very popular person in this program, Lil Wayne. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Earth Angels Veterinary Hospital, Wabanchers Falls, an integrated facility that combines conventional and holistic medicine for a 360-degree approach to veterinary care. EarthAngelsVet.com. Healthy Living Market and Cafe, featuring the Divine Wine Store, with wines from all over the world, with pairings, monthly tastings, and events, healthylivingmarket.com. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York, showing Hollywood, American, independent, and foreign films, and presenting London's National Theater Series in HD and digital sound. Open daily, spectrum8.com.
The umlaut, you know.
We're on the air now.
Oh, hi. Hi, everybody.
Welcome back. As you may have heard from our Huey Lewis intro, we're back on the air now, right?
I'm sorry. I was waiting for the words.
He's blushing. He's actually blushing.
Welcome back to our panel on the program this morning. We're talking about a whole range of issues all over the board this morning, and which is, quite frankly, what we love to do. One of the stories that, we're going to move on from Mark Sanford and talk about another controversial
public
character.
Figure.
Oh, okay. All right. Public figure is the word we're going to go with. PepsiCo is ending its relationship with rapper Lil Wayne. And why they are doing this is over what the company calls an offensive reference to a revered civil rights icon, 14-year-old Emmett Till, who was killed nearly 60 years ago. The rap superstar, who's featured in the song Karate Chop, says, beat the beep up like Emmett Till. Till, a 14-year-old black youth, was killed in Mississippi in 1955 for allegedly whistling at a white woman. He was beaten to the extent that his face was unrecognizable when his body was discovered. He was identified by a monogrammed ring belonging to his father. Mountain Dew, a brand of PepsiCo, said Friday that its relationship with the rapper would end. We do not plan any additional work with Lil Wayne moving forward. His offensive reference to a revered civil rights icon does not reflect the values of our brand. So this is an interesting issue for many, many reasons, I think. Mm-hmm. Rosemary, what do you make of this situation?
First, well, I do find it interesting because it's the power of the civil rights group to lobby for an outcome that they wanted. This is not a new song, as I understand it.
Right.
Lil Wayne is, that's what he's famous for, very outspoken and profane songs like this.
And they knew this going.
They knew it going in.
This is much like
in.
The. I mean, different because of the civil rights connotations, but same thing with Aflac having Gilbert Gottfried as their quacking duck and firing him because of remarks that he made on stage. But anybody who hires Gilbert Gottfried should know what he says on stage.
That's true. And in this case, it was, as I say, not even a new song. It was part of his repertoire.
Right.
Dare we go into ask the following question. When you hire somebody, are you looking for a demographic? In other words, are you looking for a group that is most likely to drink Mountain Dew, for example?
Lil Wayne would be immensely popular and attractive to that demographic. That's why they hired him, not expecting and not knowing how to deal with the backlash from, you know, civil rights and older people who were offended by those lyrics. So it's interesting because there's two rights here. One is you get to protest commercial use of a symbol you don't like, which they did very effectively, obviously. And then there's artistic license, too. You know, can Emmett Till be used as a part of a lyric? And it's very similar. You know, as a journalist, that you may not make any reference whatsoever to Nazis or Jews or the Holocaust. You're tramped down, and writers avoid that because they don't want an effect that they didn't intend. I had a case when I was an editor in Florida where an architect critic wrote about a building that was up on the beachfront, and it was huge, you know, monolithic building, and she described it as something Albert Speer would build, and he was the architect of the Nazis, and the owner of the building was Jewish and lodged a huge protest and, you know, demanded an apology and a retraction, and the author, the critic herself, was also an Eastern Jew. She did not see the offense in that. She was not equating him to a Nazi. She just said his building was big and monumental and ugly.
What happened?
The reporter, the critic, was reprimanded, and as was I, who was the editor of the piece, and I'd stopped at that and said, no, I know the reference she's making. I thought it was okay. It was not. So I learned from that. You do not just take out all Nazi references. It's just not worth it. And I think that civil rights is getting to that same point, and I'm not sure that that's a bad thing.
In a statement from the family, the Till family was not available for comment, but the Reverend Al Sharpton, in a statement, said that it was a teaching moment for Lil Wayne, corporate America, and the family of Emmett Till. More than a condemnation of any one artist, it is an affirmation of Emmett Till and a call for more sensitivity about what we say and what we do in our culture.
Have we mentioned, for those who don't know, that Lil Wayne is black? This is not like a white star singing racist lyrics.
Right. No, he is a rapper, and actually will be performing, has a major date in our region at SPAC coming up in August. So, I mean, he is a very popular draw, and you know, I don't think anything like this obviously is going to hurt him. Mm-hmm. With as you say, with that demographic or with his audience.
Yes, and you don't know what he was thinking he was getting at when he said it. I mean, here's a black man who basically talks about the terrible tragedy that happened with Emmett Till, puts it in sort of what might be coming out of some bigot's mouth, and says, well, you know, that's what I'm doing here, and might defend himself that way.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I have not listened to the whole song. I just know the one line that caused the problem. I don't know the context of it, and I need to.
That would be a good thing to know.
I think I have to go to SPAC.
If it has any This is just going to make me sound like an old guy.
Yeah.
But I looked at the lyrics in the full song, and I'm not really 100% sure what it's about. But I don't know that it's overly obvious. Whatever.
Not as concise as Huey Lewis. Let's say.
Not that power of right. love. Mm-hmm. Curious.
Yeah, easily understood. Yeah,
right. Thank you, Raymond. However, it is used as a comparison, number one. And number two, I still think that, to me, the company, they know what they're getting into. And at what point do you cave? I guess at what point do you say,
when the focus group says cave? I mean, this is all about dollars
money.
and it's costing Pepsi money. Done. Move on to the next shill. I mean, it's for them, it's remarkably simple.
Yeah.
And it'll go away really fast.
Absolutely. I agree with you. But then you also look at the Tiger Woods case where Nike then turns around and has an ad and says, see, whatever it takes. What was it?
That
whatever
makes Rosemary
takes.
Happy. Yeah, we've talked about this before. She loves
winning.
This.
It's yes. all that matters.
Right.
Charming.
So you win and it doesn't, it doesn't matter what you do. And it reintroduces them as their main spokesman.
So the next question, of course, is what would have happened if it was a white rapper who had made the offensive remark? That makes it a lot less complicated, at least the way I see it.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, I think it would make it a lot less complicated, but he probably wouldn't have gotten the gig, right? I mean, isn't that where it would
have? Might have.
Well, if he was as
white rappers.
Popular as Lil Wayne was, yeah.
Who's a major popular white rapper?
Eminem.
Exactly.
So, when you think of, but then I'm also interested in what you were saying, Rosemary, about, at what point does it become too much that there's nothing that somebody can't be upset about it? At what point do you then say,
it's just too dangerous.
It's
a taboo topic. It's a sacred cow. You don't go near it. And civil rights, I think, is now getting to that point. Ronald Reagan, maybe. I don't know. You can't say anything bad about him these days.
Everybody made such a big deal about Justin Bieber saying that he hoped that Anne Frank would be a believer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was not probably, it's not very smart.
It's not smart, but,
not funny.
Did anybody think he was a rocket scientist? A.
No.
B. Are they calling for him to stop his endorsement deals and so forth?
Yeah.
And is it just, dumb?
Yeah, that would be the one.
Well, wait a minute. Why is it dumb? Have you read The Diary of Anne Frank? She was a little hipster, and she that was the tragedy of the book.
I don't think there's anything wrong with what he. I don't think there's anything wrong with what he said. I don't even think it was supposed to be funny. He was just he wrote in the book. He wrote in the guest book. I thought the most shocking thing of the whole thing is they closed down the museum for him and left 10,000 people outside who couldn't go see the museum because.
He had his entourage. That's what made me mad.
But
the whole tragedy of the Anne Frank diary is that here was a girl who was denied the normal things of teenagehood. And rock star idolization, is that there's such a word? Idolatry.
Yeah.
Is one of them. So I thought it was okay. I thought it was kind of cute.
But you go, wait
just one second. And you've broken the rule, your own rule,
30
which
seconds
is not to go there. In other words, you know that there
Holocaust.
Are some taboo
okay.
subjects.
Right,
you don't
right.
go there because it's just too dangerous. I'll get phone calls after this.
Oh, great.
Joe
okay.
will get phone
and
calls.
Look,
I love
over.
The Diary of Anne Frank. All I think right. it's
the
a
show is over,
book.
And now it's time to go.
All right. Let's we'll reconvene tomorrow.
Maybe,
and we'll continue
maybe not.
With these subjects. Thank you all very much. The roundtable continues after this short break.